All right, we've been doing a Barron, sort of wrapped up the formal part of the principles. I'm going to do one more sort of an addendum class to that tonight. But I want to ask this. Did you ever feel a little overwhelmed with the changes, you know, the things that you're supposed to be? Did you feel that way ever?
Yeah.
I'm going to help you out to start with here, okay? Let me read you some scriptures. In 2 Timothy 1:12, it says, I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that he is able to guard what I have entrusted to him for that day. He is what? He is?
Able.
He is?
Able.
Able. Okay? Hebrews 2. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are, who are being tempted. He is what?
Able.
He is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself was subject to weakness. He is what?
Able.
Therefore, he is able to save completely those who who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. He's what?
Able.
He's able. He's okay, that's him. Then 2 Peter 1 says this, his divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness through our knowledge of him who is called by his own glory and goodness. Through these he has given us his very great and precious promises, so that through them you may participate in the divine nature and escape the corruption of the world caused by evil desires. So he who is able says, this is what you can do. Therefore, if he is able, what? We is able. Right? He is able, therefore,
we is able.
One more. He is able, therefore,
we is able.
We know we can do this stuff. It doesn't mean it's easy. But God says, listen, I can do all this stuff through you. All the promises that are there, his very great and precious promises, they are available to us. And he has given us the power to do, but he doesn't say it's going to be easy. I so appreciate the sister that said, Stephanie, is it?
Yes.
You know, it says, I didn't apply it to my husband, I applied it to me. That's the message that God gives us in the Bible. What we want to do is what? We want to apply it someplace. We want somebody to be responsible. Why aren't you doing what God wants you to do? But it's amazing what happens when we do and don't worry about what somebody else does. And we do what God wants us to do and say, God, there's so much power in that. Because he can do what he's asking us to do. I'm going to spend some time tonight. I got some things I'm going to read for you, but we're going to talk a little bit about an area in our relationships in marriage and the roles that we have. Because honestly, it's constantly an issue in marriage. I mean, I rarely do we have, Nancy and I have counseling appointments that it's some part in there becomes an issue. As to what should I be doing? You know, the role of the man, the role of the woman, the God, you know, is one better than the other? What's this all about? Let me start out with an illustration I've used some time ago. And I think I did it for the guys when we were together. But my own conviction about it, because how God created us, men and women, and given us roles that I'll talk about here in just a little bit. I will. How's that? It seemed loud up here. I was pushing it away thinking I was blowing you out of the seat.
Hello, everybody.
Let me get back to you. He is able, therefore.
We are able.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you. When I look at God's creation in the book of Genesis, and he starts all the creating, he starts out, if you look at it this way, with the least complex, and every day gets more. At the beginning, it's, you know, when the earth was formless, all that stuff, you know, just there was nothing there. Another day goes by, you know, and then he separates the water from the land. It's getting a little bit more, you know. Then he reaches a point in time, he creates vegetation, trees, plants. I mean, that's a huge leap forward. From there, what? Animals, reptiles, fish. Now we're really cranking in the level of complexity that God gives. And then finally, he creates man. big difference. Thinking, planning, creating. But there's one more level of complexity. Woman. Right? Right? And then he does something absolutely fascinating. He takes the most complex creature he's ever created and places it under the authority of a less complex creature. Which begs the question,
why?
Why? Right? You've asked that question, right? Let me give you my absolute strong feeling, and the more I think about it, Marshall, this of why this happened. I mean, God created, I think, no question, the most complex creature in this world is a woman. And, you know, we all understand, even science understands, there's a real difference between men and women. You know, the emotions, right? Nobody argues that. I hope you don't, but I mean, even science figured that one out. Women, much, much more emotional, much deeper emotional, right? Also, those emotions are very much on the surface. I think I can't tell you all the reasons that God would do that, but I know one that's very, 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 very straightforward, and that's because of babies, children. A mother can bond with an infant in ways that men can only sit back and go, wow. Now, I've seen it with my wife, my daughter. It's very, very different. Not that guys can't love that little child, but it's very, very different. The connection, those emotions, those feelings that are very, very much on the surface are by God's design to give that infant a connection that they so desperately need. But that also does something else as far as this woman is concerned. Because those emotions are so deep and there's so much on the surface, they are very vulnerable. They can get hurt easily and deeply. And here's what God, I absolutely have strong convictions of what God is doing. You ever have, women, have you ever said, why don't you, to your husband, why don't you understand me? Right? Done that? Because I've been on the receiving end of that one. Why don't you understand? Let me tell you something else. God created a woman to be exactly the way He wanted her to be. He also created man to be exactly the way He wanted him to be. God created men to not be able to go emotionally where a woman goes. It's not a matter of can they grow to be there. But God created a very different purpose for a man. I've created you so that you cannot. You may even want to, but you cannot go. I mean, imagine God, the last thing He wants is two in the house going, please, please. Why would God do that? Because I have got this creature here, this creation, fragile, tender, vulnerable, open to a lot of pain. If I leave her out there alone, she's going to get hurt really bad. I mean, guys can get hurt too, right? We feel pain, there's not that, but it's different. You feel pain, you feel bad, you shake it off, okay, it's tomorrow, we're going to do something else. I mean, it's sort of how we think. So God says, I will take this very fragile creature and I will put her under the protection of one that will shelter her. When the arrows come flying, I've created him to be able to handle that pain. And it's not a matter of one being better or more valuable than the other. That's not it is. We're created very differently. But if we trust God's design in this, and we make this thing work, and we provide that safety, and if a husband is to provide safety for his wife, which I believe is absolutely a primary role that we have, who's the first one that we should keep them safe from? Us. Who can cause the most pain? Hey, a husband. I mean, husbands and wives, we are, and that's part of, we do marriage counseling, man, the barbs fly between and everybody. The ones that can cause the greatest pain absolutely cause the greatest pain. And God says to the husband, I want you to shelter this creature, this creation. And when a woman understands, it's not that I'm under, you know, I'm less valuable and I have to submit to a man. God says, listen, do it. Trust me. I put this together. When it works right, it's the best way. Both of you, trust me and do what you're supposed to do. I believe a husband's job is to create an environment within which his wife can grow and flourish and become everything that God created her to be. But I provide that for my wife. I'm to provide that protection. And that gives me a very, very distinct role. And it's interesting. Roles get very confused. They get very messed up in this day and age. And for a variety of reasons. Women want to say, well, I'm just as smart as you. I can do that job. I can do this. I can be an astronaut. I can be a, you know, I can rope wild cows. I can do all that. And say, yeah, but you are still a woman. Yeah, you are still a man. So we've got to figure out, how does this work together? Because there's a problem. Let me read a couple of things. There's a problem in this world about men, honestly. I don't know if you ever read the Wild at Heart book, probably a long time ago. I pulled it out again. I was looking at this. I read another book to the guys when we had a class together that also was very good. But I want to read a little bit of this. So bear with me. Most messages for men ultimately fail. The reason is simple. They ignore what is deep and true to a man's heart, his real passions, and simply try to shape him through various forms of pressure. This is the man you ought to be. This is what a good husband, father, Christian churchgoer ought to be. Fill the blanks from there. He's responsible, sensitive, disciplined, faithful, diligent, dutiful, etc. Many of these are good qualities that these messengers are well-intentioned, I have no doubt. But the road to hell, as we remember, is paved with good intentions. That they are a near total failure should seem obvious by now. No, men need something else. They need a deeper understanding of why they long for adventures and battles and beauty. And why God made them just like that. And they need a deeper understanding of why women long to be fought for, to be swept up into adventure, and to be the beauty. For that is how God made them as well. So I offer this book not as 7 steps to be a better Christian, but as a safari of the heart to recover from a life of freedom, passion, and adventure. I believe it will help men get their heart back, and women as well. Moreover, it will help women to understand their men and help them live the life they both want. That's my prayer for you. And here's a quote. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how a strong man stumbles, or where the doer of good deeds may have been able to do it better. The credit belongs to the man in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause. Who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who have never known either victory or defeat. There is something that God created a man to be. It's interesting, when I read this book the first time, it has been, I don't know, probably 8 years ago. I was watching TV one day and they had this show and they were talking about men. And one of the things was this woman was being interviewed. And it was during the time that all these Australian actors like Russell Crowe and these guys were really coming into their prime. And the women following these guys was just intense. And they were asking these women why they felt, what was it that was so attractive about those guys? And the answer was really, really interesting. It said, American men have been domesticated. There is something about these guys that is untamed. And I'm telling you what, they were like pouring all over these guys. But I think it's true. I think the goal of some women for their husbands is to be a nice guy. And you've got to ask, as a little boy growing up, is that really what you wanted to be? Or did God put something in your heart to do something? Now, should we be nice? Yeah, but we do it to the extent of removing that part of what God put in us. That God created us to be protectors, to be warriors, to be there, to stand in the gap. To be chivalrous, to be concerned about it. I see guys all the time walking 5 steps in front of their wives or leaving them someplace, going doing something else, and not even looking back. That's not what being a man is. Let me read a little bit more. The way a man's life unfolds nowadays tends to drive his heart into remote regions of the soul. Endless hours at a computer screening, selling shoes at the mall, meetings, memos, phone calls, the business world, where the majority of American men live and die, requires a man to be efficient and punctual. Corporate policies and procedures are designed with one aim, to harness a man to the plow and make him produce. But the soul refuses to be harnessed. It knows nothing of daytimers and deadlines and profit and loss statements. The soul longs for passion, for freedom, for life. As D.H. Lawrence said, I'm not a mechanism. A man needs to feel the rhythm of the earth and needs to have in hand something real, the tiller of a boat, a set of reins, the roughness of rope, or simply a shovel. Can a man live all his life and keep his fingernails clean and trim? Is that what a boy dreams of? Society at large can't make up its mind about men. Having spent the last 30 years redefining masculinity into something more sensitive, safe, manageable, and, well, feminine. It now berates men for not being men. Boys will be boys, they say, as though if a man were to truly grow up, he would forsake wilderness and wanderlust and settle down, be at home forever in Aunt Polly's parlor. Where are the real men is a regular fare of talk shows and new books. You ask them to be women, I want to say. The result is a gender confusion never experienced at such wide level in history of the world. How can a man know he is one when his highest aim is minding his manners? I don't know about you guys. I tell you, the first time I read this book, I just sat back and thought, this guy gets something. That God put in us something very, very different. How do we use that? How do we become? We sit in front of television sets. We do very little. We want somebody else to provide for us instead of getting out and working hard. We want respect, but it's hard to respect us. And we don't win the beauty. You know, I used this as an illustration a long time ago, maybe you can remember some of it. And I said, picture this. I believe this is, at some point in time, every little girl's dream. I'll use a football stadium. You're in this arena at night. The lights are flooding the inside of the arena, but it's so bright in there that everything out is just darkness on the outside. There's all the talk and of all the things going on, and you feel the excitement of something's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, the noise dies down. Everybody's kind of looking around, wondering what it is. And all the eyes go to the far end of the stadium. Coming in through the stadium, out of the darkness, is this white horse. And this handsome young guy riding it. You could hear a pin drop. He starts riding slowly along one side of the arena. And he's looking. These young ladies are looking, man. Their hearts, you can feel them beating. Absolute quiet. And he stops in the middle. And his eyes meet this one beautiful young girl. And with one powerful move, he sweeps down and lifts her effortlessly up and puts her on the saddle in front of him. They look at each other, a gentle tug of the rein, the horse rears up a little bit, and they gallop off. 10,000 eyes are just staring. Pretty good, huh? You with me, girls? Right? I mean, there's this something in our lives. I want somebody. And it's supposed to be us. And yeah, we got to have manners, got to do that, but we don't do it to sacrifice what God put in our soul to make us stand different and stand apart. and be someone who protects, who produces, who provides for the family the best we can that God's given us, and provide a place of safety and encouragement for our wives. That's a man. I want to read something too. This is pretty cool. This is a book I'd recommend. It's called The Book of Romance. It's actually a commentary. For some of you that have read Song of Songs, right? It's that last book in the Bible people read, right? Getting married now. I'm going to read that book. And then you read it, and something interesting happens. You think, what the heck is this talking about? Because it's talking about goats and flocks and running through Gilead and all this kind of stuff. You're thinking, this book is awesome. This is a practical commentary on the book of Song of Songs. I want you to hear this. I'll talk about men. I'm going to talk about the sisters here in just a minute as well. But listen. In the Song of Song, the bride and groom were alone. At last, in the bridal chamber, they were there for one purpose, and they both knew it. The bride still had on her veil and embroidered wedding cap to hold it in place. Solomon, God says, the wisest man ever to live on this earth, and he's showing his stuff right here. So listen. Solomon told her, "Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have a dove's eyes behind her veil." He was a smart man. He knew that sex for a woman always begins in her mind, a woman's most sensitive sexual organ. A woman doesn't feel the same pressure or insistent urges for sex that a man feels. She gets ready for sexual intimacy through what she thinks and feels. And to a great extent, she thinks and feels the way a man leads her to think and feel. Nothing calms a woman's fears or excites her passion as much as having a man tell her how wonderful she is. The man told the woman, who just a couple of chapters ago was complaining about her dark skin, how fair she was to him. He liked what he saw, and he told her so. He appreciated her, he valued her, and acknowledged her beauty, built her up. And he looked deep into her eyes as he spoke. It was a wonderfully intimate moment between the two newly married people. He looked into her soul as a prelude to exploring her body. Solomon had been called the wisest man to ever lived, and at this moment he exhibited wisdom. He knew how to reach the innermost depths of the woman he had married. He then began to undress her, starting with the wedding cap. As he removed it from her, the locks of her hair tumbled down freely and sensuously. Many Jewish women have curly hair, and that's the image depicted here. The locks of her hair were a little wild, a little disheveled, cascading down over her shoulders, just like a flock of goats playfully skipping down the mountains of Gilead. The mountains on the east side of the Jordan were known for their excellent grazing land. They were considered a blessing and were occupied by countless flocks and herds. The image here is that the man was nuzzling the hair of the woman, his face fully into her long, curly locks of hair. Next came the removal of her wedding veil, so that Solomon, for the first time, had a full view of the face of the woman he had married. In our culture today, we would find this nearly unthinkable, that a man might marry a woman whose face he had never fully seen. Yet this was customary in Solomon's time, and in fact is still the custom in a number of very strict Muslim communities. A woman's beauty in those communities is considered to be solely for her husband's pleasure. He is the only man, apart from her brothers and father, who really knows what she looks like. A man is not allowed the privilege that we American men have of shopping around for a wife like customers staring into store windows. Solomon began to tell her that he liked what he saw. And the good news is that she was responding to him with a wonderful, open-mouthed smile. How do we know that? Because he complimented her teeth. He said, "Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep which have come up from its washing." Now, you and I might not consider that to be a compliment. A man came to a woman today and said, "Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep," the woman is likely to feel more offended than complimented. Solomon was noting that she had a marvelous smile, and that her white, even, straight mouth full of beautiful teeth was a delight to him. He spoke that she had taken care of herself. It spoke to him of her delicacy and genteel manner. I don't know of too many women who would desire a compliment on their teeth, but I don't know of any woman who doesn't delight to hear that a man loves her, that the man she loves would say to her, "I love your smile. I love the sound of your laughter." Solomon appreciated her beautiful soul, her beautiful features, and her beautiful expression of joy. Teeth are part of the mouth, of course. And Solomon was moving in for the kiss. He continued, "Your lips are like a strand of garlic, scarlet. Your mouth is lovely." This is kissing talk. He's tracing her features with his hand and also likely tracing them with his mouth as he whispered his approval and appreciation to her. "The temples behind your veil are like a piece of pomegranate." She was blushing, and he liked it. He could tell she was starting to tingle at his touch and respond to his close presence. He moved down from her face and to his neck, and he said to her neck, and said, "Your neck is like the Tower of David, built for an armory on which we hang 1,000 buckles, all shields of mighty men." The woman was standing tall and straight before Solomon, no shame, no bowed head in disgrace. She had an inner strength of character that matched his own. She knew who she was, and as his new bride, she knew who she was in relationship to him. She was not embarrassed by what he was doing, and neither was she rigid under his gaze or his touch. Rather, she was ready for all that he had to say to her. She had a tilt to her head and a sparkle in her eyes, ready for him to explore her further. This is the unashamed beauty of sexuality in its divine setting. Hey, this is hot stuff, isn't it? This is awesome. But he was a man taking charge, doing what he was supposed to do. And she understood that she was a woman. That's another problem that we face. We got men that don't stand up like men, and we got women that refuse to be women. They want to call the shots. Interesting scriptures, the Bible. I know Nancy shared them with the sisters, I believe, Proverbs. God says it's better to live in the corner of a roof or in a desert than in the house with a contentious wife. Wow. In 1 Peter 3, God says that the beauty of a woman is gentle, a gentle and quiet spirit. God says it's of great worth. Contention is an issue with a lot of women. Argumentative, belligerent, insubmissive, not feminine. We want a masculine man, but we want a masculine woman. In that whole thing, embrace him before, when God says, John Eldridge was saying in Wild at Heart, that we want mild mannered, we want men to be women. And women are responding, "I'll be the man. I will push this around and I will shove it back." I'm telling you what, it is destructive. Being masculine is getting in touch with a man to become who God wanted him to be. Being feminine is a woman who's getting in touch with who God created her to be. And loving it. And embracing it. And saying, this God says, is how I will have life and have it to the full. I will become that woman. It's not a competition. God has already set the lines. They're already drawn. If you got a problem competitively, your problem is with God, and you are in a lot of sin. But God calls us as men to be men. The real deal. Men who don't say, "Oh, I'm just really tired, I'm gruff, I'm going to come home grumpy because I had a bad day at work." Really? "I just need some time to sit down because I've had a rough day, you know." Yeah, really. Or do I say, "What is it that God wants me to do here?" Does that mean you don't take a rest? I'm not saying that. But the spirit in which we say it, the spirit in which our heart is there, we can be a light. I'm telling you what we can. When we decide, "I trust God. As a husband, as a man, I trust God. And this is who He created me to be." And you can read through the Bible and what He David's mighty men. Warriors. Guys that would do whatever they needed to do the right thing. Women, feminine, beautiful. And therein lies the mix. And I believe what those women said, when I saw that interview several years back, that American men have been domesticated. Hey, do this, help run the house, get all this stuff done. I'm not saying we don't help. I'm not saying that. But the expectation from wives is that they now have another wife in the house. And if you don't do what I say, and you don't agree with me, I'm telling you what, you will pay. Now, they may not say that, but that's what happens. And just like Stephanie's saying, you know what? It's about me. The Bible is talking to me. And I got to look in that mirror. If I want a great marriage, we want great marriages, right? We do. I hope you do. I don't think anybody gets up and says, well, I really want a bad marriage. I'm going to make it worse today. This is going to be awesome. I don't think we do that. I think we long for it. But then you look at the Bible, you know, for men to say, stand up and be a man. For crying out loud, stop acting like a woman. I've told men this. That are so cotton pick and emotional. I just looked at this one guy one time years ago. I said, be a man. Would you stop crying? Every time I talked to the guy, I talked to his heart, the guy would start crying. I said, stop it. And he did. It was amazing. And he remembered that for years to come. He would talk to me. Remember that talk we had? I said, yeah, I do remember that talk. Every time I get emotional, I think, that's a talk. John looked at me. He said, don't stop. Be a man. Just be a man. And it had a difference. And for sisters, be a woman. What's your reputation? And don't tell yourself that. God says, we're deceived. Our heart's deceived above all things. You've got to ask somebody who's going to be honest with you. What do you see in me? We've got to get back as men that part of us. Hey, we can make an impact in the world around us. There's too many domesticated men around here that I believe that are longing for somebody to stand up and say, this is where it is. Let me give one good story here. Years back, there's a guy in Boston Church. He was, this is a man's man. This guy was, in his sinful life, he would run drugs from Central America. He'd fly planes, get shot at, do all that kind of stuff. I mean, the guy was the real deal. I mean, he became a Christian, awesome guy, repented, everything's fine. But I mean, this guy was awesome. And there's a couple of brothers that were on a plane. True story. I know the people. They were on a flight someplace. They were going back to Boston, and they were having their quiet times in the plane. They had their Bibles open, and this very attractive flight attendant walks up to them and says, "Are you Christians?" "Yeah." And she said this. This is the quote. "I'm looking for a church where a man's a man." Guys went, "Oh, well, They brought her to church. She got connected with this brother. I'm telling you what. And they're still a great, great couple. But she was a woman. Knew she was a woman. She said, "I'm tired." Basically, she said, "I'm tired of these men that aren't men. And my heart is longing for a guy that's the real thing. That he will lead me, that he will take care of me, that he will put up with me and call me on it." I thought, man, that's a woman of God there. I mean, she's got her rough edges, but she's willing to put it under the protection of where God wants it. And it works. When this works, we will be the brightest light around, I assure you. When a woman will look at her husband and be fired up that he's the guy, she's easily under his protection, walking with him, fired up. But what she's not going to say is, "Well, as soon as you get there, then I'll do my part." Then you got another problem. But you have a woman who then sees that, feels that, understands who God created her to be in all the glory, that most precious, the final creation. And say, "God, you love me that much. You created me that special. Then you have put me in a place that I'm supposed to be. And I trust you." When we do that, man, I'm telling you what, it works. It will change you. And if He is able, then?
We are
able. If He's able,
we are able.
I'm telling you what, you can do this. and you can make it work. God bless you. Have a great time. Love you so much. Hope you enjoyed the evening. Okay? Thank you.